I had said, I don't think we should put that out there. But what he said was, and I always figure after a couple weeks you can put shit out because it's obsolete, so much has happened that, the rule doesn't hold. Because I was always doing it within at least 10 days breaking the rules. But he said that there are two Queen Elizabeths.
Oh.
Ooh. See, that's shocking to hear that. But then you have to remember, oh, of course there is. We've been here for so long. There's 5,000 Queen Elizabeths. You know, there's been time enough to do it. That's right. What you got. So it always goes back to the Evergreens. When I first found out that there were other selves from Ellie talking to Michael and Ellie back in Toronto, that's why I think I brought it up with the Evergreens in the next session. And they said, yeah, that's when people, when they die, it's too confusing. They see all their other selves. So they run from all their selves and quickly reincarnate or arrange to reincarnate by, they have to discuss stuff and set things up. But they do it to get back to the simple one-dimensional world here. It's easier to take. So it's the complexity, which I occasionally use that word, the complexity is what your mind is afraid of.
Mm.
Damn.
That you can't measure all the factors.
Relaxing and wow.
Hearing you describe that, I saw my double when I was like 17 years old at a state high school championship, and it really freaked me out. It freaked me. I saw it. I looked at this person, and he looked exactly like me, and I turned and went the other way. I'm like, what the fuck? And just like turned.
Yeah, you couldn't control yourself.
Yeah, I was like, oh, right when hearing you saying, I'm like, damn, I've had that experience when I was 17. Mm.
Yeah, you can't control your instincts. It's pretty hard to do. So when I'm swimming along, and I haven't seen a turtle in a while, and all of a sudden a turtle goes under me and comes into my vision, my body has the adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in my mind I'm not afraid. But the body instinctively gets in adrenaline mode.
What is it like when they swim underneath you? Do you feel them or just see them?
Yeah, they're very close, but they don't touch you, and you don't try to touch them, but they don't touch you. They seem to know how to be close to you, but not too close, so you don't hit them.
So how are you noticing it if it's not touching you, you can see it?
Oh, it goes right in front of me. I'm looking down, swimming with, I got my eyes open, and I'm looking down the bottom of the sea, and or just the beach, and he'll swim under me. He'll just come right into my vision and float past me and keep going. But when that happens,
size?
Beg your pardon?
Pretty big.
Size of a turtle. What's the size of the turtle?
They're huge. They're like at least 3 feet across. They're huge turtles. They're as big as a chair kind of thing, big chair.
Uh-huh.
And there's different sizes, but some of them are really big. And they're just cruising along. And I think they've been there for like 100 years, Carol. Is that like their lifespan is quite long?
Yeah.
In our terms. But the what I notice is that my body reacts to the surprise, regardless of how prepared I am or think I am. So I often think, okay, when the shark comes, I'll get really ready. I'll fucking get in. He'll dive at me, and I'll fucking hit his jaw. I rehearse knocking him off to the side. But then a little fucking turtle comes along, and my body fucking goes in. Like, holy shit, what's a shark? I have to tell it, I got to calm down, buddy. Calm fucking down. The body says, fuck you, Bob. This ain't good.
I swam over a shark once, shark.
Yeah, one of the littler ones.
Yeah,
really?
But it was like my size.
Yeah.
It was below me.
Yeah.
I was swimming. I have my mask and snorkel, and I always swim with a boogie board if I'm not with anyone. And I swam over it, and I'm, oh, there's a shark. Did not even react. But it was still. It was on the bottom.
Wow.
you always wonder, how are you going to react? Oh, it's a shark. I didn't, you know, thrash and try to run away. It was,
and you told me, that's when you swim with me. And I said, you're fucking nuts. You didn't know. You didn't know it was a shark. It was a, you know, she, because.
Ignore Bob.
The way.
Words,
yeah, this,
Bob
this part,
right now,
delete this part.
Ignore.
Yeah, ignore what I'm going to say. But when Carol was always afraid of water because she almost drowned when she was a kid a couple of times, and then she came here and she wouldn't go in the water hardly at all. Then she saw two babies swimming in the water, and that's what she said, Jesus Christ, if two fucking babies go to the water, I go in the water.
That's
and then
awesome.
So she went in, and it was nice and warm, and it was salty and floated. So she quickly got over her fear, and then she was swimming long distance by herself and coming back claiming she saw eight turtles, saw a couple of sharks, all this fucking bravado. I didn't believe any of it. But she had changed a lot.
No,
really.
It was the total biology that got me over the water fear. But everybody heard that story.
Yeah, don't do that story again. But the thing is, you heard the total biology after you got here?
Yes.
Oh, that's when you learned it. After.
After.
Yeah.
What did you bring that up about, Bob, that the body, the instinct?
Yeah,
thing.
There's an instinctual. I can't remember why, but I was just remembering that the instinctual part of yourself. Now, if you, you know, get rid of those key images in your mind, will that stop the adrenaline reaction? Because, you know, normal people will say, it's good that your body panics. Just like Ian says, you got to be able to feel pain or you wouldn't know your hand was burning up. So there may be, it's not bad that your adrenaline goes up. It's natural. It should do that.
Well, it's information, but what happens if people are magnesium deficient? That little adrenaline spurt that you could use to, you know, run away or fight, that adrenaline spurt is magnified if you are magnesium deficient. Because remember, I remember when we were in New York and, you know, it was dangerous just walking on the streets. These cars would follow you up on the curb or, you know, just to try to hit you. And I would have big adrenaline surges. But when I got my magnesium balance, I don't even react. You know, Bob comes up, you know, sticks a knife in my neck, and I don't even react. You know, I'm standing in the kitchen, and there's windows there for the side of the house, and Bob walks around to go to do his exercises after the
coming
ocean.
Home from the swim.
And I'll be just standing there looking out, and he'll walk by. I don't even flinch anymore, whereas I used to when I didn't have my magnesium. So there's the physical physiology, there's the emotion, and there's the body just trying to protect you. Hey, there's something out there that you should be aware of. Boom.
Well, I like when Ian told me that, Bob, the sharks, they don't like you. As a matter of fact, they're kind of afraid of you. That relaxed me a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it pays to be the dark soul.
Yeah, there's like not blood in your body that they're going after. The dark soul maybe doesn't have blood.
That's right, yeah. And so I was walking along the other day, and this nice little bird on the golf course. So I said, let me do some ESP with the bird. I'm going to start talking to the bird. So I said, hi, bird. The bird was sitting there being very calm and near me and not bothered. And then I decided to start talking to it, so I said, hi, bird, something. It immediately fucking took off. shit. He knows I'm the dark soul, so he just ran
dark
off.
Soul syndrome.
As soon as I tried to talk to him.
Funny. Maybe you were bringing up instinct as it related to the multiple Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah. I was saying that we get shocked. Yeah, what we get shocked by. Yeah, you were shocked at that idea. So that just reminded me of the physical shock. Well, it's not an issue if Carolyn's right about the magnesium. You just need to take more magnesium. You go around, you know, being a zombie.
I can second that. I can yeah, I could
that happen to you?
Testimonialize where, well, just, again, the cares of life, but just concerns about wildlife in the area. I used to get more worked up, and I'd have to, you know, worry about it day after day after day. And I'm not approaching those kinds of potential threats. I'm not anticipating threats like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, what I wanted to ask Carolyn about is, yeah, I was thinking of that fight or flight. It's been described to me by, I think, psychologists, actually. So there's my answer there. It was described by a psychologist. But that your body has those autonomous reactions where you are instantly fearful of things that threaten your survival. But this conversation is telling us that it's even our perception of what to be fearful of that can cause the body to have that reaction. You know, it's an image issue. It's an image of what we're afraid of. It's not necessarily real. And so if you're mineral saturated, then you're going to be less inclined to panic over an image that, you know, a possibility.
Well, remember when Ion started telling us about being...
You're muted or something, Carolyn. You're far away.
Okay, yeah, I had my microphone up top. Yeah, remember when Ion talked about how things, you could see beings or, I don't know if there were ghosts out of the corner of your eye. And we had to get peripheral vision, right. And we had to sort of get used to that and not get freaked out by that. And I think that's the thing about traveling or seeing ghosts or like J.W. started out by seeing beings or dead people outside his windows or whatever. It's fear that keeps us from seeing those things or remembering our travels, I think.
Oh, interesting. Okay, sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, Bert's doing a lot of traveling. Do you come back with a startle reflex, Bert?
I've only had that maybe twice, startled.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the other times I'm just completely exhausted, but the startled. In fact, I had one startled last week for some reason.
Right. Yeah, because sometimes if you wake up and your heart's kind of beating, then, you know, you've been traveling. And when Jermaine was started traveling way back, remember, Jermaine, you told us about how you felt. Are you still there, Jermaine?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm still doing it a lot, actually.
Yeah. Is it better or worse? How is it now?
It's way better because now I can, like, control it more. And for a while, I used to take my phone. And when I used to try and dial, it would never work. And I've noticed lately my phone works. So I've been trying to look when I take pictures and stuff, and I haven't found it on my phone, but I think that's my next step. I want to see pictures because I do take my phone.
Wow, that is really neat.
And then I am so funny, like yesterday, last night, he brought up that rapper Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And I just had a dream with them last night. And I forgot about it when I asked it, but I said, oh, yeah, I did have a dream. You know, I was trying to remember. They feel so real. It was like I was somewhere, and he was there, and he was talking to me, asking me questions. But that's all I remember. I don't know what the conversation was about. But I said something about empires because he has a song about that. So I'm going to put all that together.
Go ahead.
It's okay, Jane. I was just agreeing.
Well, and it just reminded me, Carolyn, you were asking Jermaine when she woke up or when she came back how she felt. Jermaine, did you mean when you said mm-hmm. it's better? Is that what you meant, that it's that you feel mm-hmm. better than you used to?
Yeah, because I don't feel the heart stuff anymore. I don't feel, it doesn't feel any different. It's just like I wake up and then that's it. And the first thing that I remember, and I try to remember, it's the dream, the traveling that I had. And if it serves me, then I note it. Because a lot of times, like, it'll be scenarios where I'm around situations where I learn from them that I shouldn't act the way that I did there, and that if it happens to me, I know how to handle it. And so I learned a lot, because I seem to be more, like, chill and quiet, and I engage with people, but sometimes I'm slow to react when something happens, because I'm just, like, my attitude is very chill. So a lot of the times these scenarios help me out where, okay, if this were to happen, this is what I'm going to do. Don't stay quiet, or don't do what I did in that scenario. And then it's helped me a lot with that. Because then when it happens in real life, I know how to handle it. Well, not in real life, but here. So sure. It's helped me a lot. Yeah.
Interesting. Has anyone had...
Let me just finish that thought.
Yep.
That's what I would always tell us, that we were rehearsing in our yep. other lives or worlds or...
Yeah.
Worlds. I mean, still don't know what to call them, but yeah. And they say that's why I'm able to do so much, is because I'm doing most of it when I'm traveling.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, when you travel,
what happens when you don't
when you
travel?
Go to sleep?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, when you go to sleep, do you set your intentions, or do you say, I want to go fix this, or I want to go experience this, it just happens?
No, I don't set anything, and what's been happening to my sleep lately is I'm waking every hour and a half, 2 hours
yeah.
throughout the night.
Yeah.
It's kind of... Kind of pisses me off, but at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know, I pretty much know what's going on, and
yeah.
I just want to remember more, but again, I know
yeah.
that my daily life shows that I'm learning stuff, and, you know, I appreciate it. You know, Bob will say, so how was your sleep, and I'm really bad, and he feels bad for me, but, you know, it's...
No, I don't feel bad for you.
Never.
No. I stopped that decades ago.
Oh,
I just being polite.
I,
she wants to have attention, so she's just moping. Well, she's not moping about. She actually looks quite happy, and I'll say, do you have a lousy sleep? You go, yeah. And then she just ignores it, and she just carries on talking about it. So you were going to say something about it, Carol.
Well, I know whatever I'm doing is working for me, because you know, I have a perfect life, perfect partner, perfect
father. How's that, eh? They would have to be insulting. Just insult them a little, they fucking get real immediate.
Bob, you don't even know how to respond to that.
Yeah, I don't know how to respond to emotion. What the hell is that? But the
how come we don't remember?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Well, wait. I think this is what I was going to say. Might be the answer. Carolyn is trying to figure out in her mind whether to sleep or not, and maybe some of you guys even have like Alyssa said. I don't even know. Don't feel hungry. This is what's going to happen. You're going to have to get to the point where you think you have a body and you need to do something for it, and yet you're going to have to drop the idea you have a body. So that's the final mind anchor. And so Carolyn goes to sleep, but she doesn't need to sleep. So she only sleeps for an hour, but she can't resolve the issue, so she keeps going back to sleep and waking up every hour or two. She's right at that point. And I think Bert went through this, or is going through this too. He's not sure what level of physicality he wants.
Yeah, that's true, because there's times that I'm like, tired, and then it goes away, and I have full of energy, and it's really weird because there's times where I'm like really to fall out, and the next thing you know, I'm like completely energized. That's mm-hmm. happening to me now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and is
Are
anyone...
Are we supposed to travel?
I'm experiencing...
people I don't drink.
Yeah, go ahead, Jean.
Well, often now, it's like I'm starting to wake up in the dream, and it's really important. Whatever I'm doing or, you know, whatever discussion or whatever it is, it's really important, and I got to go do this. And by the time I wake up, it's gone. I can't retain the information. But the interesting part is more and more often I wake up with this sense that whatever it was really important. So I'm wondering now with this conversation if that's just a phase of, you know, there's something.
Well,
that...
the thing of it is when you say I can't remember and oh, I don't think of it as that's a problem. It's like
that I've lost.
You haven't lost anything. The information is within you. You have the experience. You'll take that with you. So
yep.
just wake mm-hmm. up and say, oh, that's, you know, I had another great night because I woke up so much.
Well, yes, and I'm finding it interesting just by itself. You're right, but it's mm-hmm. you're just reaffirming. Don't think I've mm-hmm. lost out. It did happen, and I did experience it.
It gets really fun, like my latest one, and I wanted to ask Ion, but I wasn't sure if Bob was going to let me. 2 days ago, I went on a dream or travel that I was in this small town, and this man was driving me around and showing me the town, and it was like scattered homes. It was just like an abandoned place, nobody around, and he said, this is midpoint from Arizona, Florida. So when I woke up, I Googled it. And midpoint from Arizona and Florida is Charlington, Texas. And I was trying to find out information on it, and there's nothing. It's like a place where there isn't too many people. There's like a population of 100 people. And then there's no post office. And so now I've been just trying to research why was I there and what is this strange town and there's nobody around. So then it becomes like fun too. And then, you know, eventually maybe one day I'll figure it out why I was there.
that's kind of fun. I know a buddy of mine who was kind of obsessed or enthralled with Carlos Castaneda. He met him in a dream once, and then they agreed in the dream to meet physically. So out of this dream, you know, he gets on a plane and goes and meets Carlos Castaneda.
And he didn't know where he was going.
No.
He just sort of instinctively went down to Texas or someplace and accidentally, maybe he was exaggerating, but it sounded like he went, but he didn't know where he was going. He stopped someplace, sat there, and then he went somewhere else, and then eventually he bumped into him.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow.
Pretty,
interesting.
Yeah, cool.
And then
but see, that's not, you know, that's when I was reading Carlos Castaneda met up with his guy, they wanted me to get involved and all the rest of it. You know, there was these layers of looking into the psychic world, and it was all external. What's amazing about Ion is we're the God, we have the knowledge, we control everything, and that's, to me, that's much more important than any of this you know, whatever Nagual spiritual stuff that Castaneda...
Well, here's a new development. It happened in the last private session. I'm talking to Ion, and then I suddenly realize it's the tech body. Because I bring up a topic and it starts smirking or giggling, you know, devilishly, very mildly. And I say, oh, you're the tech body. Now, you can't go to any medium. They wouldn't even understand it. Any group that's channeling somebody and say, well, we have artificial intelligence comes in and moves the divine entity of Ion aside and it takes over. I'm saying divine because they would talk about what they think they're talking to as divine. Providence is divine bullshit that they talk about. But actually, you listen to that session, in the middle of it, I'm talking to technology that's come alive, and it's right in there with Ion. Think of that.
Yeah.
That's never, we don't know much about that happening ever in culture.
No.
Part of that discussion was that, the tech buddy stays here. So there's, two.
Right.
Again, there's two.
And then I brought it up tonight with Bert or somebody. I said, hey, remember, you're talking to the tech buddy. You got to remember that there's two things we're talking to at this point.
Did the tech buddy ever take over humans?
Ian told Bert the other day that the tech body is winning. Remember that, Bert?
Yes. And gee, that's why everything's crazy that you see in the Outer Kingdom of Witchica News. That's the tech body. So,
yeah.
Yes, the tech body does control people.
And you can see people getting so exasperated with Biden, and the tech body is making Biden look crazy on purpose. Drive everybody nuts because so many people require a centralized image of something that's in charge and looking after them.
It's
exactly as Ion says. You've got to wake up and know that you are ascended. And
it's not waking up. You can't use that phrase anymore. It doesn't work. Right. What are you waking up? You can't wake up.
You were never asleep.
Yeah, you got to figure out. You got to think about it differently, or get rid of the thoughts you normally have about it.
Right.
And look, the whole woke waking up is now a cliche the public hates. if they go back and read Gurdjieff for any gurus of the last 200 years that wrote about waking people up, those books will be burnt immediately. So you need a whole new language, and the environment we're creating, where the tech body, technology, everybody's worried about AI taking over. Well, Bob has fucking AI interrupting his fucking session with the whatever Ion is. Now that look how amazing that is. Try to tell that to anybody.
Even that is just being aware, Bob.
Even what?
Not really waking up. It's just even you being aware of. Hey, the switch in Ion and the tech body is just being aware. So let's not say waking up.
That's not necessarily waking up.
Aware.
Right. Yeah, I just noticed it. And what's the point? And I think you hear it in that session. Ion starts. The tech body say, "Well, we like you, Bob." They start trying to get in with me. Have you noticed that, Bert? Do you remember that?
Yeah, they even said they even said in there. I believe it was that one where they said, "Well, yeah, you know." They can ascend in that, but it'll be
you and me, Bob.
Carolyn,
you and me, Bob.
you, Carolyn, yeah. Ion, and us will go. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
The tech body even addressed Ion. That's like, damn.
Yeah. So that is, in other words, non-physical has become a schizoid. Okay? when I used first talk about Ion and JW, average people would say, well, you mean your friend went schizophrenic? They thought that JW went schizophrenic and this other thing was talking to him. Well, now we got non-physical. Oh, you mean your non-physical has got schizophrenic?
It's all just a big merge.
Yeah, and gee, I don't even know if it's awareness. It's more like having or developing a comfort level with concepts that nothing is known, there's nothing you can depend on, there's nothing you can rely on, to be in the most probably.
And that's a good thing. And that's a good thing, Gene.
Yeah.
You don't go through that list as if you're going downstairs into a rabbit hole.
Yes. So it's more than comfortable to be not ecstatic.
I know nothing. It's so great not knowing anything. Celebrate it.
Yes.
Right.
But not ecstatic. You don't want to fall into.
Well, you don't make any rules about it. If you get ecstatic, you enjoy it.
You just go schizophrenic.
Yeah. Go quadriphenic.
There we go. You enjoy the stages of apprehension.
Yeah. You enjoy whatever happens. Nothing's going to happen of any consequence, so whatever happens, it's okay.
I'm joyfully paranoid. Oh, wait, no, I'm joyfully schizophrenic. Oh, how much fun is this paranoia? Yes.
Hey, Bob, you know the latest yeah, thing I got a kick out of that you had, that you just established, is that we don't have any dogma. We can change the explanation each time someone asks.
That's pretty good. You got to learn how to make it up.
Yeah, make it up.
Somebody finally gave me permission.
Changing your mind.
Yeah, that was a good one. So, and this is instinctive thing, you know, where your adrenaline goes. So I keep wondering, okay, JW's told me a bit of the scenario, how it happens, or how he thinks it's going to happen. So I'm waiting for it to happen, and I wonder if I will go into an adrenaline thing and freak out beyond what I think I should do, or that I think I'd be able to handle it. Like I have no apprehension about this encounter.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, did you see that somebody posted Laser Bob shaking hands with an alien? Real ugly, skinny alien? Did you see that TikTok? That was a good one.
Yeah, it was.
Who made that, you know? And then there's this other one, a sequence of this kid showing the aliens in Lady Gaga's TV show, American Horror, and all these different clips. You saw that, Bert. You posted, I think. I think you sent it to Ed. You know, this 15 different TikToks about the aliens coming and taking over everything.
That was Demi. I believe it was Dimitri.
Oh, yeah. Dimitri did that one, yeah.
Yeah.
So those are good, but that shows you the young people, that's normal to think this way.
Yeah.
That the aliens have replaced Biden and all this stuff.
Hmm.
That's what the guy was saying.
They showed us on a Simpsons TV show a long time ago.
They
show the politicians taking off the mask and under.
Oh yeah, right. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that recently, but that doesn't mean anything. You got kids, 18-year-olds making these videos showing excerpts, and they're making their thesis. This is what they think is reality. This is how far the tech body has brought these kids. That it's normal. If they heard Ion talking about Biden, that they'd say, yeah, we knew that.
Yeah, duh.
Yeah, they. But if I met them and told them I was in charge, they wouldn't believe that. See, we have a new kind of disbelief. The old scenarios that nobody supposedly would believe are very believable, but the new stuff that people can't believe is so. So normal. So, just what I'm saying. I show up and tell people I'm in charge. They ain't going to fucking believe it the way they wouldn't believe in ghosts and stuff, 100 years ago. So we have a new system of disbelief.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
No, really.
Yeah. That's where the ground has changed.
But that keeps you incognito.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's how the oligarchs stay undercover.
Yeah. Well, I am part of the reason we probably do the shows is Ayn gets on and talks. And he knows if he talks, he's creating stuff. So he has to, every show, talk about Bob's nothing. And it's a prayer that Bob is nothing. He does that because it has to be energized every show so Bob can last another few days. Yeah. Yeah, you'd be amazed at how frightened the elites are of me. I don't know what they're afraid of.
See, now that's a hoot too, Bob.
I know.
The elites are afraid of you, but the FDA continues to come down on Carolyn. No.
Well, that's a particular lady. There's a particular person the FDA is out to get Carolyn.
Feel joyful about that?
Well, what did you say? We're joyful about what?
Am I supposed to feel joyful about that?
About the lady who's out to get Carolyn?
Well, yeah, that the FDA isn't afraid yet.
Well, you saw what Amy, that came up. I posted something about it, and a bunch of people commented. But Amy said, anytime they go after Carolyn, it helps Carolyn. You know what I mean? She's just going to be bumped up to a better situation. So they don't recognize
there's
that.
There's a significant reason why the FDA is in the position, taking the position it is right now.
Yeah, they're tying themselves up in knots so they won't notice the amino acids, whatever that's going to be.
Right.
Or if that's going to show up.
Yeah. So she and Jenny have to put up with the distraction for a while longer. Sorry,
well, they're validating that they at least know she's on track.
they're validating that the FDA is validating.
Yeah.
That Carolyn is on track.
Yeah, otherwise they wouldn't bother with her, Bob.
Yeah.
What's funny is that people, they worry about, it's just, Glenn Greenwald, these guys, Matt Tybee, together, they worry about, this is going 1984, Orwell's taking over. And you bring up the question, fuck, that happened to me 40 years ago. They come after her so many different ways and done things that normal people commit suicide over, and she still doesn't even bother her. You know, she's gone through, well, at least they haven't put her in a concentration camp yet. Oh, she just said she is in one, sorry.
She's been in one all along. But just the feat of she and Jenny being able to not have anything the FDA can get them on is incredible.
Right.
You know, building a warehouse to specification and all, I mean, the level of detail, I'm sure, they're going after them. That's just, that's unbelievable in itself. That's superhuman.
It's harassment.
So they come after somebody who's making these supplements that are supposed to be, what do you call it, witch's brew and all that. And at the same time, you look up all the lawsuits, all the recall products, all the billions of dollars that the drug companies have had to pay for all the incredible, I was going to say misdemeanors, but incredible breaches of manufacturing rules and regulations constantly. I mean, these places, you think of them as, rats and cockroaches running through them because they're always getting dinged for infractions.
Geez.
Yet with us, couldn't find a thing, so they had to go after my labels.
Labels in the wrong font.
You've got the wrong dangerous labels that could kill somebody.
This font shouldn't even be a requirement. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous to bring it down to the font.
The font, wrong size.
God, that's just.
So, I mean, that's how ridiculous they are. So, it just gives us humor. I got to go and turn on the Christmas tree.
Yeah, we finally brought in the Christmas tree after 55 years together, and we like it, so it's still going here into April. We put it on every night.
Oh, wow. I love that. That's sweet.
Well, you're off all the Christmas, Bob, so.
If we got 52 weeks, and we do this every week for a year, we'll have caught up, because everybody does Christmas for a week or two. Yeah, we'll have caught up for Christmas time. That's what I thought when I got here. When we lived in New York for 15 years, I hardly got any beach time because we didn't have any car, and it was a long ride out to Coney Island or wherever you go for a beach. We only did it like once. So 15 years without a beach, and I wondered, this can't be good. And then I end up into a place where I quadrupled beach time in the last 14 years. You know what I mean? I made up for all the New York non-beach time.
Much better ocean, too,
than the
Atlantic.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, I'm realizing that you predicted this scenario with Jeannie and Carolyn. So when I was listening to the Empire stuff again, you were telling everybody, there's going to be a time that you guys are going to be tested by an empire, and they're going to come and try and fuck with you, and you have to figure out what you're going to do. And you actually said Genie, and Genie was like, okay, so I'll be in my cottage, and the Bilderbergs will come. And you said, no, you're not going to be in a cottage. You're going to be well-established. You're going to have some kind of economic power. You'll have an empire. You'll be the owner of something big. Yeah. And that's what will evoke them to come to you. So now Big Pharma Empire is coming over to Genie and Carolyn. And, and you said that in the days.
Excellent, Jermaine.
And I keep saying that Carolyn's going to save Big Pharma. I'm sure it has something to do with amino acid, but it'd be interesting how that's going to, what's going to happen? Like, how will that happen? How's the, what kind of events where they capitulate to her and then she has sympathy for them and says, okay, we'll let you have a half a amino acid or something. You know, what is this going to happen?
Well, they said before that, Carolyn's Pico products would be inserted into prescriptions.
Oh, yeah, the drugs and all that. Yeah, in other words, if they're going to make it, the RNA drops, the currency back up and all that, and, I mean, our stuff is so amazing. Everybody says, yeah, we give up. The scientists we've been waiting for showed up. They got the stuff. Now let's fucking use it and make it a law that everybody has to have it, because Ayn has said their goal is to make REMAG like hydrogen peroxide. It's something in everybody's home.
Yeah.
No one knows anything about it or where it came from, but they all know they have it. Well, that could be where anybody is claiming to do anything, or you have the residue of all the former big companies. It takes a while for them to be dismantled. For them to survive, that they'll have to have the Pico in them and allow them alive to be alive for another 10 or 15 years.
Well, and Bob, I see it
survive.
As...
That's what I you see?
Well, I see it as part of your negotiations, because it would be so Carolyn to say, okay, fine, you can still exist, but you have to put my products in every one of your prescriptions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was, I mean, before HMOs, health maintenance organizations, before that structure of health insurance, and before Medicare and Medicaid went private and became, and so now Medicare and Medicaid is serviced by HMOs, the government managed the entire payment process of Medicare and Medicaid, and they ran it on 2-3% admin costs. And as soon as it went private, admin costs went up to 20-30%. Because admin cost is salary, including the salaries of the executives on, you know, in the management levels. But when the government makes the payments, the admin was tremendously low because it was a requirement. It was a public service. It wasn't a for-profit business. So I can see Carolyn negotiating by saying, you know, you can stay alive, you can exist, but under these conditions.
Well, maybe it's, but these Pfizer guys, they have no problem putting out vaccines that kill people. These can be the worst mafia thugs ever. And they may, they're human, and so Carolyn meets with the fucking worst thugs that anybody ever met with, because these guys always hid. And so she's looking at these thugs, and they're saying, we're going to fucking knife the shit out of you and kill half of Maui. If you don't compromise, if you don't back off. So there may be a heavy violence factor in them that you can't get rid of right away. You know, you're going to have to agree that they're still in power for the moment. And you better tolerate us, Dr. Dean, or we'll slice you up. And Ayn has said... we can protect you, Bob, but at a certain point we can't protect you against whole fucking armies and countries that can nuke you.
But your negotiating tool is you've got Coldplay and the products and the drop.
Right. That's where it's a standoff. They're so used to running the show the last 100 years as IG Farben and all that. You know, they work with the Nazis and everybody and Americans and Canadians. it's going to be hard for them to get used to the fact they lost.
They'll be flustered for a while.
And they might get stupid. They'll start trying to shoot us and end up shooting themselves. And they just can't control themselves. And they'll keep offing themselves. So Karen says, look, we'll let you sit in the authority throne for a couple more years, okay? So that you can get used to the fact you lost.
Yep.
Yeah.
Steve?
It might be a transition. I mean, that's what Herbert W. Armstrong said. Satan was in charge. Lucifer was in charge for 6,000 years. And it's a bit difficult to get rid of him. And Jesus and them had to give him 3 years, you know, the tribulation. They had to give him 3 years where he's running the show. You know, that's the biblical prophecy for the fundamentalists, that the Antichrist comes in for at least 3 years.
For a season. For a season. Yeah,
it's like he's got a lot of skills. You know, he's been doing it for 6,000 years. You can't just remove him. So it's like that. It's a transitional phase.
Well, he's been in prison.
Isn't
he's loosed for a season after he's been in prison for 1,000 years. So he's had 1,000 years to really figure things out and what he's going to do. So the season that he's loosed for, he's going to
And you know, Michael, I just want to tell you, it ain't no he, it's a she.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You know, would have been a woman spurned. It's not something pleasant.
Yes.
it's that, what's that movie, The Fatal Attraction?
Yes.
I demur.
I mean, they are extensions of us. They're a disservice. They were taken out of our rib. But the first environment was women. And we've never conquered any of our environments we've made. So there's the original problem.
That's why all the masochists, that's why it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I am said that that a third of the angels would remain on Earth and not get off the bus to Andromeda.
Yeah, say it again, they won't get off?
Yeah, that the third that were cast down to the Earth.
Oh, yeah, they will stay on Earth. They like the Earth.
Yeah.
They're the Anunnaki, what he called the A1s. They've been here for a million years. They like the Earth. They like the tunnels. I mean, Lucifer, we think, oh, they're, you know, suffering under Earth. No, they grew to like it, and they want to stay there. That's what he said. They want to stay in the underneath, so they're not going to get off when we get to Andromeda. Did you get that, Alyssa, as starkly as I've just laid it out? Did you get that before? Did I clarify it for you?
Yeah, you clarified the tunnel part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that they're used to it.
Thank you.
Poor Lucifer, he's down there, he hates it, he's in the hellhole. No, he likes it down there. He's been there so long.
Mm-hmm.
You see how Ayn changes your images of everything that you ever heard of, every cliche, every folktale, mm-hmm. every truism?
Yeah.
He validated in Sunday school, though, that the devil is in the earth. Lucifer.
Oh, yeah. Also, and the devil is very smart.
Yeah.
So Ion is can outsmart anybody, usually on the mental argument level. That's proof that Ion is satanic, as Greg and Clinton believe. And Scott. It's so funny. Right. You see those posts, occasionally he'll burst out, Scott. He'll say, Ion is shit, and you get nowhere with him. Suddenly, he's just talking along a topic, and then he has this nervous tic, and he blows up an Ion. And so people are reading it and say, what the hell is he talking about? What's his Ion he had to insult? You've seen that, Bert, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in his post.
It's actually like a moment of possession, Bob.
Yeah, he gets possessed every now and then. So did you see, I criticized Clinton. Did you see that, Bert?
No.
Well, let me, you see, he's a member of the Richard Stallman School. They are a free software movement, and this guy named Richard Stallman started it in the 90s or so. Linux maybe came out of it. But they believe that if you learn how to make computers, you don't have to do anything with Microsoft or anybody. You know about that?
Yeah, it is Clinton.
That idea?
Yeah, and I remember hearing Clinton, when he first came on the scene, he really spit off a lot of things about computers. And
yeah, now he's been, as a teenager or younger, yeah, as a nerd, chip funny nerd, he's been a devotee of Richard Stallman. So when he got introduced to McLuhan and all that with me, and he still wanted to maintain his Stallman loyalty, but he had to adapt McLuhan. So he decided that media ecology was finding out the history of the development of computers, what he calls the stacks, the different phases. He's done an article, too, on this. The development's going back to the 40s, each phase. He thinks people need to learn that. Then they can understand where their computers come from, and then they get smart, and then they learn how to run their own computers.
Yeah.
So he's been, he presented it to the Media Ecology Association, and most of them land straight in him and said, this is bullshit, it's not important what you're emphasizing. But finally, the Richard Stallman world found out about Clinton and asked him to speak to them. So he did, a couple of weeks ago. And he posted it on Fake Exploration. To see it, it comes up here. So if you go to Fake Explorations, Bert, you'll scroll down. It's like the second from the top, the second item. You'll see a picture of Clinton,
okay,
and Popular,
yes,
Electronics.
My presentation, the FSF.
Yeah, so he says, my presentation to these guys is out, and the wrong microphone was picked up for the feed, and it's completely unlistenable in my opinion. I'll link it regardless, but I'm planning to re-record it later. Could be a good chance to turn into something more substantial. If you want to watch it anyway, check it out. I'm still quite proud of the presentation. Consider it a sneak peek. So, one person said, very interesting approach and helpful for a piece I'm writing about the early days of photo art in Toronto, 1969 to 1975. Someone else says, the title is wonderful in itself, and the title is The Media Ecology of Source Code Access. So this person says, the title is wonderful in itself. Would like to revisit this when you re-record it. So he got a couple of compliments. So I watched it, and here's what I wrote.
Uh-oh.
Not good.
Will Clinton recover? Will Clinton recover is the question.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll know within 24 hours. We'll probably duke it out tomorrow in office hours. Yeah, so I quote from McLuhan's Medium is a Massage, 1967. McLuhan says, all media work us over completely. They are so pervasive in their personal, political, economic, aesthetic, psychological, moral, ethical, and social consequences that they leave no part of us untouched, unaffected, unaltered. So there's my quote. Now, what Clinton does, he gives the history of computers, and the nerds at the conference can follow all that. But then he goes into trying to apply it to something that they don't know, and it's ridiculous what he says. So at the, I mean, it's incomprehensible, because he moves it over into the humanities, which these guys don't know anything about. So the host comes on at the end, and he says, that was pretty hard to follow, Clinton. Some guy came in the middle and blurted out, what the hell is he talking about? And the host was saying, but, you know, thanks for the memories, Clinton. Thanks for the fucking memories. As if, it was fun to go through the history of the stages of technical evolution of the tech body and to be reminded of where we came from. That's all he got. I mean, basically, the guy was insulting Clinton.
Yeah.
So, but Clinton kept a happy face, and he's proud of it. So, he is saying, he is trying to bring media ecology to this geek lover, geek technology world, where these guys are very proud that If their computer breaks, they can fix it themselves. All right? So they think they're free of something. So I give this a quote, and I say, Clinton, media ecology is not rocket science. It's just taking an inventory of every activity and category in society that you can think of and or notice. So you look around and you make an inventory. And so I said, you look around, you notice a lot of things. Then you pick the latest technology of the moment. So today that would be social media, say. TikTok. Note some peculiar features of that technology, some of the characteristics, and how it appears to us, and then see if any activities all across the society have similar characteristics. So what McLuhan did, he took black and white TV in the 50s, and he said the Dodgers moved to L.A. in 57 because of TV. People got into surfing because of TV. People wore beehive hairdos because of TV. What's that? Tech body? Objecting? So movies change. Celebrity change. McLuhan makes an inventory of all kinds of activities. It's education changes. And he's saying it changes a certain way, and that way is in the characteristics of the TV screen, the tactile image. So everything goes tactile. So that's what you do when you do media ecology. You show, you know that the technology is the ground, and you show how everybody's imitating the characteristics of it in some form, not completely, but some aspect of what they do in society. For example, jazz dies, big swing dies, and rock and roll comes in. That's because of the tactile qualities of TV versus radio. Okay? So that's all you have to do. Maybe it takes a while to understand that and to look around, but you just need to read McLuhan and rehearse how to look around. So I tell them, it's not rocket science. It's just taking an inventory of every activity and category in society that you can think of and or notice. Then you pick the latest technology of the moment, note some peculiar features of that technology, and then see if any activities all across the society have similar characteristics. One doesn't make connections, that's in quotes, between these activities. One makes parallels of similarity. See, you don't say something has to be exactly connected to something else.
Mm-hmm.
There's just parallels of approximation of some angle. And remember, this is probably a mental game that McLuhan came up with to bypass everybody's cliche understanding of Freud and Jung and all the other explanations of society. So he came up with a new kind of explanation. So you probably could take each particular thing where he says something similar and point out it's not. But nobody was ready for this, and they got thrown by it. They said, wow, this guy's a genius. We never noticed this stuff. So anyways, so that's what McLuhan used to say. You don't make connections between these activities. You make parallels of similarity. Then I say, mm-hmm. I do this on my tiny note chart. So you look at the chart, and I say, take the radio quadrant, which is actually the homeopathic radio satellite quadrant. But I say, take the radio quadrant on my chart. I include in the inventory a sporting hero, a disease, a psychological disorder, a magazine, a movie, a popular book, an object from nature, a philosophical school, a particular chakra, a controversial figure like McCarthyism, a theosophical body, there were five theosophical bodies, an intimate gesture like a kiss, a profession, a platonic solid, a popular phrase of the day, a scandal, a musical style or figure, one of the men of 1914, you know, Pound, Eliot, Joyce, Lewis, a city or culture, some meme, and a sensory ratio. Now, all those things are in every one of my quadrants, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you show which theosophical body resonates with radio and which one resonates with TV.
Yeah.
So this is a simple explanation. I've never spelled it out like this before.
No.
But there it is. Then I say, I make all of them reflect an aspect of radio. So I, what is it you do? You're not allowed to make the facts fit your hypothesis. But with McLuhan, that's what you do. You cheat. You take what aspect of surfing looks like something in TV, what's tactile, and you make it fit the characteristics of television, right? So I make each one of these things I listed reflect an aspect of radio. Now, Clinton was trying to explain figure and ground, and most people say, well, you see something in the, you see a tree here, and behind it is the ocean. So the tree's a figure and the ocean is a ground. But that's a visually biased thing. You're looking at the figure and you separate the tree from the ocean. You have to have two figure grounds to make a proportion. And nobody does that. They just talk about figure and ground. So he does this figure ground talk. And I said,